This is the Champions Rugby Show. I'm Martin Hindley. Today, I'm fortunate enough to be speaking to the man who put more than a little bit of tartan into his beloved Bath.
The success story of this amazing club, it's never ending, but this is their biggest ever prize, and they become the first team to wrestle the Heineken European Cup away from France.
He led Bath to victory in Bordeaux to create history in 1998. He's a former Scotland captain, and he's now making a living out of waxing lyrical about rugby, very stylishly too, for the BBC. Joining me today is the former scrum half, Andy Nicol. Thanks for joining us, Andy, and how are you doing these days?
Yeah, real good, thanks. Just getting through lockdown as everyone is, but really enjoying it, seeing the positive side of it, spending more time with my family. Obviously missing live sport and live rugby in particular, but we will get through this and we'll get the good days back at some time, no doubt, very shortly.
You tweeted recently that you know how much you're missing live sport when you're watching a snooker match from 35 years ago. I mean, how much do you like looking back at the nostalgia of sport, and how does that balance against your kind of impatience to get back to seeing live rugby again?
Oh, listen, it is great reminiscing, and it is great looking back at some of the old matches, whatever. I mean, I love all sports. So, yeah, that was the 85 World Championship snooker final between Steve Davis and Dennis Taylor. I knew the outcome, obviously, but still I was getting nervous in that last frame. So, I mean, sport is great in that regard, but there's nothing like live sport. And, you know, I think it's great looking back on all these old stuff, but you know the narrative, you know the outcome, you know all the emotions that went with it. When you get live sport, you don't. That is the narrative. That gives you the narrative. And so even that Saturday afternoon when results are coming in, even though they don't really have much bearing on my life or anything like that, but you still wait to see, you know, Dundee United is my football team, so what's their score? You know, and then Man United and, you know, Liverpool and just all that. And then go back to rugby, Dundee High School FP. You know, we had a really poor season, but you still want to get that result when it comes in. So I have to say that Saturday afternoon lack of live sport, the results coming in, has been pretty tough.
You mentioned that final from 35 years ago in Sheffield, and it's crazy to think that now we're looking at 25 years for what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. How much opportunity have you had before lockdown to really reflect on what you achieved in your career and to look back with nostalgia on your own life in rugby?
I'm very proud of what we did that day in Bordeaux. It was quite poignant, actually, in the last couple of years when Billy McNeil sadly passed away. He was the Lisbon Lion, the captain of Celtic. He was the first British player to lift the football European Cup. And I was the first British player to lift the rugby European Cup, the Heineken Cup, back in 98. And I met Billy a number of years ago. He wasn't obviously very well the last few years of his life, but we met and discussed that. And it was lovely. And I was at Parkhead last summer for the Pro 14 final, and went into the trophy room and saw the European Cup there. And then anytime you go back to the rec, you know, you see the Heineken Cup there. And it's lovely to have that sort of connection. It was something I'm immensely proud of. And even though it has been 22 years, the memories are still very, very fresh.
I mean, we'll come on to that special day at Parc Lescure in Bordeaux in just a few moments' time. But you joined Bath in 1994 after enjoying a really successful amateur career in Scotland. I mean, how did all of that come about, and how did you first settle in Bath?
So I was playing for Dundee High FP, which is my old my rugby club. My dad, my grandpa had all played, and so it was that was great for me. We got promoted up to the Scottish First Division for the first time in the history of the club in 1992. So that was great. But by this stage in 94, I was about to graduate from University of Abertay in Dundee doing business studies. And I'd been in the Lions to New Zealand as a temporary replacement in 1993. I'd gone to the Hong Kong Sevens 2 years running, and I went to play in the Tens out there. And like, so Jason Leonard and Peter Winterbottom and people like that were involved. And so, you know, this is well before agents came in. The game's very amateur, obviously, still back then. And I made it known to a few people that I fancied playing in England once I graduated from university. And so I think the jungle drum started beating, and I got a few inquiries. And the main one actually came from Gloucester, Barry Corliss was the director of rugby, if they called it that back then. So he made contact with me and invited me to join Gloucester. And so I'd kind of made the decision that I was going to go to Gloucester. And then on the Sunday night, genuinely, if I was going to phone Barry back about 7 o'clock, at 6 o'clock, by chance, Brian Ashton phoned me from Bath. And he said that Stuart Barnes had recommended me. Having made my mind up that I was kind of going to go to Gloucester, I actually gave Brian my answer immediately and said yes, because you know Bath were an amazing side. They dominated amateur rugby. They were full of internationals. I'd loved watching them, the recreation ground on Rugby Special back in the day, and I just thought it was a perfect fit. So it was an easy decision. So I then phoned Barry back and declined politely the chance to go to Gloucester. So that was how it started.
You had some experience of travelling with rugby before you went to Bath, but what were your thoughts individually and I guess as a group when the Heineken Cup first came into being? And you got your first chance to playing it in the second season when the English clubs joined the fray. What were your thoughts back then?
Just excitement. I think the whole club were really excited about the opportunity to play in Europe. Bath had dominated English club rugby for a number of years. I mean, and when I say dominated, it really was. I remember reading that over a period of time where there was 23 major trophies on offer in England, Bath won 16 of them. You know, the cup final at the end of the year was just an annual pilgrimage along the M4 from Bath because we were in it every year. And so we dominated English rugby. And we always, I guess, thought that we were the best team in Europe for many years, but there was no vehicle to prove that. So when the Heineken Cup came along, it really became the Holy Grail. It really was the one that that we wanted to win and get that star, if you like, on the shirt and the trophy in the clubhouse. So it was great. We obviously transitioned into professional rugby by this stage, and you know Bath will be the first to admit we made a lot of mistakes, just like a lot of clubs did. But we didn't make that transition particularly well. And so that season, 97-98, you know, it had been a really up and down season, but things just fell into place. And it just became a wonderful journey, a wonderful chapter in the club's history and a chapter that everyone was desperate to be able to write because of that, because the European Cup was something very special, unique, and something that we'd always wanted to be able to prove that we were the best team in Europe.
Talk us through that squad going into that historic 97-98 season. I mean, if you read the back line by itself, it's an A to Z of quality for its era. I mean, was there a feeling that you could go and achieve something special with the personnel that you had in that season?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that back line was probably the best back line I played in, you know, at all stages of my career. It was Mike Catt at standoff, Phil de Glanville and Jerry Guscott in the centres, Adede Adebayo on the one wing, Ian Evans on the other, and John Callard at full back. It was phenomenal, very experienced. It was a really good age demographic to win a major trophy because you know, you're various stages through a campaign, you've got to dig deep, you've got to draw on a lot of that experience. And there was a huge amount of experience in that team. And up front, you know, we had the likes of Dave Hilton, Mark Regan, Victor Abugu, two stalwarts from Bath in the second row, Martin Hagen, Ollie Redmond. And Dan Lyle at number eight, who was a hugely talented American number eight, who did things in the rugby field that forwards don't normally do. And then a couple of real workhorses in Nathan Thomas and Richard Webster from Wales, who really brought a toughness and a hardness to it. And Bath were always renowned for being tough, especially up front. And then there was lots of players on the periphery. You know, Matt Perry played every game of that competition up until the final. Jerry had been injured a lot, and Matt Perry had played at 13 for a lot of the games, and he was just a young kid at the time, but what a talent. But then he didn't get on in the final. But it was Eric Peters, there was Freddie Mendes, there was a huge amount of talent in the squad. So we knew that on our day, if it all clicked, if we all played well, that we could beat anyone. It was just putting it all together, and we had a couple of really good games in the tournament. The group was okay. It was we had Breve in our group. We then ultimately obviously played them in the final as well. And they
were the holders at the time, weren't they? Having hammered Leicester in Cardiff in sensational style the year before, that must have been some challenge for you.
Yeah, it was, and that really focused the mind. That we knew we were up against the reigning champions, and so it really gave a real focus to us. We'd the Scottish Borders and Pontypridd as well in the group, and you know, they were fighting. I mean, there were so many sort of backstories in this. Remember that when Pontypridd went to Brive, it was the Battle of Brive, as it was described, and the battle sort of went on after the game in a restaurant or bar in the evening as well. So there was so many sort of backstories towards it. But you know, we got through our group, which is what you're looking to achieve, and we had a quarter final at the Rec against Cardiff, and that was one of my favourite club games at the Rec, because it was just that a traditional West Country South Wales derby. The Bath really grew up as a club before the advent of leagues in England. Bath used to go across the Severn Bridge every week to play against the big teams from South Wales, the clubs down there. And that's what really gave them the hard edge over the years. So there was a lot of history between Cardiff and Bath, and it was a wonderful atmosphere. Cardiff brought over about 3,000 fans. You know, the Rec only held about probably 10 at the time. So, and they were all in one area of the ground. So it was almost like segregation. It was almost like football grounds, which I love my football and I love the atmosphere that football grounds create and generate. And the Rec that day was almost like a football ground. And it was a really tight game. It was a real tough game, but we got through it, and that, as I say, was one of my most memorable club games at the ground.
The first two winners of the European Cup were Toulouse and Brive. They played each other in one semi-final. You get to play Po in the other at the Rec. How important was that? And was that the moment where you thought, hang on, this could be our year?
Yeah, when you're in the last four with Toulouse, Brive and Po, the one team you'd want would be Po, and the one place you want to play it would be the Rec. So it absolutely fell perfectly for us. And you know, it was an unmemorable game, if I could say that. It was we just did enough to win. It was pretty tight, but we never thought we were going to lose it. And it was genuine. I know that, and this is no disrespect to Po whatsoever, but it just felt like a stepping stone. We wanted to get to the final to then take on either Toulouse or Brive. And it didn't matter. We knew it was going to be, the final was in Bordeaux. So we knew we were going to have to, well, once we got through the quarterfinal and everyone, you know, the four teams were left, we knew we were going to be playing a French team in France in the final. And so it was a case of which one. So once we got to play Po in the semi, that meant that it was either Toulouse or Brive. And I remember going to the Pulteney Arms on the Sunday with a few of the boys to watch the second semi-final. And I didn't mind who we had. We were there. And it was just going to give the club a fantastic day in southwest France. But it was also going to give us a chance to achieve what we'd always wanted to achieve and win the Heineken Cup.
So take us to the week of the final now. You fly out to Saint-Emilion, I think it was, on the Wednesday before the final. Once there, I mean, how did you go about preparing for a side that, as you mentioned, you'd already faced twice in the pool stage? I mean, what different did you do that week in preparation for the Heineken Cup final?
We ramped things up. It was very much like an international week. It felt like an international week. And that is great because most of the players, if not all of them, were international players. So we were just able to just flick into almost international preparation week. And we stayed in a wonderful hotel in Saint-Emilion, you know, all the vineyards all around. We went to, I think, a Thursday afternoon just for a bit of relaxation. We went to the Cheval Blanc vineyard to see how one of the best red wines in the world is produced. And that was really enjoyable. And we weren't allowed to buy any Cheval Blanc because it's all for export. But we went to Sister Vineyard and some of the boys bought some wine and put them down. And I wasn't really into my wine at the time. I really wish I had been, because I'm told that they put it down for about 15 years. They had it. It was absolute. 98 was a very good year for wine in Bordeaux. And it was seemingly worth quite a bit of money 15 years later. But it was just great to relax. But going back to what I mentioned earlier, the experience of the squad at the time meant we were able to just prepare for a big game. It was clearly a big game, but we'd all had big games. We'd played international rugby for years, for many of us. And so it was just, we all fell in line, and it was just very exciting. What it meant is we were cocooned away, and what we couldn't see was sort of the excitement growing in Bath, and there was loads of day trips. That was how the vast majority of the crowd, I think 7,000 Bath fans, came out And they all, a lot of them did day trips on charters from Bristol Airport on the Saturday. And people who were on that trip said it was just one of the most amazing experiences in one day, to have it in one day. We had it over obviously a number of days, and we just built up nicely to it. And I remember being very calm. I remember being very excited. I remember being very humble, actually. It really did hit home once we got there to the ground, just what an opportunity we had, and the responsibility that I'd been given as captain. And Bath is... The history of Bath is steeped in some of the great captains, and Roger Spurrell and Andy Robinson, John Palmer, Stuart Barnes, Phil de Glanville, who was still there. And, you know, for me to be given that honour to captain Bath Rugby Club was one I'll always cherish. And I remember it hit me just the enormity and the opportunity. And, you know, in your sporting career, to have an opportunity like that was just wonderful. A lot of people go through a career, they never get that, and that was ours. And that's why there was just such a resolve to not just get there, but to win it.
Well, the facilities were very different. Much changed in Bordeaux that day, with the stadium being prepared for the FIFA World Cup finals, which were in the same summer. Obviously, we're talking about a late January final now compared to the timings that we're talking these days. Getting changed in a nearby school, I think, at the time. Did that help bring you back to a sense of normality without the same kind of pomp and ceremony that you might get for a usual European Cup final?
Well, if anyone has have ever been to the recreation ground in Bath, the changing rooms are not particularly good anyway. So we were kind of used to it. And again, that's where the experience kicked in, that it was very unusual. It wasn't an orthodox changing room. It wasn't a school. We had a long walk from the ground to the changing room after warm-up and then back out again. My abiding memory of that sort of pre-match was hilarious, actually. There was because it was a long walk, there was a massive tunnel, and it was, literally about 100 yards long. It was huge. And there'd been all this trouble early on in the competition with Brive and Pontypridd, and we'd obviously played against them twice, home and away, in the group stage. And I think the authorities were really worried about things could kick off in that tunnel. And so it was hilarious. When I look back down the line of my teammates, as I'm standing at the end of the tunnel about to lead Bath out, and Philip Carbonneau, my opposite number and captain and scrum half, was doing the same. And, you know, there was two massive, especially the forward pack, two massive forward packs. And in between was a line of French stewards wearing their, you know, fluorescent orange jackets, who were all about 5'10". And so if anything had kicked off, they would have been powerless to stop. And it was just one of those moments I thought, this is really strange. But it just made me relax a little bit more. But thankfully, nothing did happen.
You've mentioned the strength of the forward pack. That day is remembered by a lot of people looking back through the archive for all of the points scored by John Callard. But how important were the pack in winning that game and getting over the line against Brive in France?
They won the game for us, without a doubt. JC scored 19 points, and, you know, the back line were heralded as, you know, as I said earlier, one of the best I've played in. But without a doubt, the forward pack won Bath that Heineken Cup, because we didn't play great, but at one stage we were 15-6 down, and we had endless scrums in our line, and we held out. They got a couple of penalties, and they went for the scrums rather than taking the points. But that front row in particular of Dave Hilton, Mark Regan, Victor Bugo, huge. They've never really got the credit, I don't think, that they fully deserve. Because if we concede then, and it was pretty near the post, so it had been 22-6, game over. That was it, done. But we managed to cling on, and fair play. I'm standing there, obviously, next to the scrum. I'm not doing anything. They're putting all the effort in, and that was it. That was the moment Bath won the Heineken Cup. Clearly, it happened later, but that was the moment that we had a chance still to win it, because if we'd conceded, that chance had gone. So it was. I'll always give them credit, because they absolutely won it for Bath. We managed to go up the other end. We got a penalty, and then we got the converted try, and from then, the finish was just unbelievable, with us kicking a penalty and then them kicking a penalty or trying to, missing it. And then I dropped it, the ball, and then with the 5-yard scrum that they went for the drop goal. It was just an unbelievable finish to a game.
Now, what can Bath do? They have to resist this final Brive challenge. They're going for the drop goal. It's Arbizu. It's missed. Everybody needs to get there for Bath. Webster's got a hand on it. The referee checks his watch. Bath champions. That has to be one of the most dramatic rugby matches of all time.
So you have family in the stands. You've won the match 1918, and you're the first British captain to lift the European Cup. You followed all of those great captains that you've mentioned and earned your right to be named alongside them and in the history books. How does it feel to hear that right now? And how did it feel back then to get your hands on that trophy?
I get goosebumps just thinking about it when you read it out, because it was very special. It was incredible. My mum and dad, my brother, my wife, now wife, we were getting married in the July of 98. So we were engaged at the time, and it was incredible. Special. My dad followed my rugby career all around the world, and he said it was just the best weekend of his life. And as soon as they were wearing their kilts and Bath shirts and that, and as soon as the crowd sort of saw the kilts, they put two and two together, and they were held out as celebrities themselves, my mum and dad and brother, because you know they were parents of the captain. And so that was magical for them. And yeah, I mean, it was incredible, an unbelievable finish to that game. And I genuinely, you know, when Christophe Lamaison went for the penalty, and the ball was coming to me, and I dropped it, I genuinely thought I'd dropped the opportunity. I thought that was it. They were going to get the drop goal, and because it was right in front of the posts. And I thought the roller coaster of emotions I had of losing, and me, the captain, personally losing the final. So all that hard work that we'd done to get ourselves back in that game, the forwards holding out in our line, you know, the try and then the penalty that John Callard kicked, you know, all 19 points, all that was going to count for nothing because I dropped the ball. But that's fate meant that Arbizu, the Argentinian, missed the drop kick. We touched the ball down and we won. And it was just incredible, the sight of the scenes at the end. And I remember there was a moment of quiet contemplation just before we were going up to get the trophy. And it was Phil de Glanville, who I got a huge amount of respect for in every sense. And he, knowing what it was like to captain Bath and the pressure that comes with it, and he'd had success, he'd lifted trophies. And he put his arm around me and he said, "Andy, enjoy this. It doesn't get any better." And I always remember that. And it was just that moment of quiet contemplation in amongst this cacophony of noise and celebration. It was just a sense of achievement. And so when I went up, it was just amazing, and to get the trophy. I remember turning around to the Bath fans, 7,000 of which were to my right as I turned back to face the ground. And I just knew in that moment what it meant to us, but what it meant to so many people connected to Bath Rugby Club. And that's when you're playing for more than just your teammates. That literally was a city that we were playing for. And you know, the thousands that couldn't make the trip were watching back home, and you just knew in that moment just how happy they'd be, and they would just be able to revel in it for years to come. And you know, I don't think sport, you never underestimate the importance of sport. And I think in that moment, when you're lucky enough to have that success, you just know how important it is to so many people.
The success story of this amazing club, it's never ending, but this is their biggest ever prize, and they become the first team to wrestle the Heineken European Cup away from France, Bath, the European champions.
I imagine, I haven't done it myself, but I imagine it's a hungry and a thirsty thing to do to win a European Cup final. And I guess with that in mind, Bordeaux probably should be one of the better places to get some refreshment afterwards. Tell us, how did you celebrate winning the Heineken Cup that night?
Well, we ended up having a brilliant night, but we had this is a genuine true story. You know what it's like when you're having meals in France, are a big occasion, and we didn't really want a big occasion, a big sort of sit down, massive dinner. We just wanted to enjoy the moment. And so we came out the aftermatch function, a sort of very quick one, and we wanted some food. And we had a couple of liaison guys who were sort of organising things for us that week. And they weren't really, they hadn't asked them to, so they hadn't done anything. So they didn't really have any place for us to go. So the Bath rugby team with Heineken Cup, went to the local McDonald's in Bordeaux, and we walked in and we took the Heineken Cup in, and there was, as you can imagine, there was supporters of Brive and Bath in McDonald's having their Big Macs and milkshakes and what have you. And we walked in with the Heineken Cup, and we actually asked the people behind the counter to fill the Heineken Cup with thick shake, but I don't think they got lost in translation a little bit. But we had a quick bit of food, and then we just wanted to go out and enjoy each other's company. And we had a private room in a bar for about an hour, because obviously a lot of people had family and friends over, although a lot had come on the day trips, as I said, the flights in and out. So a lot of the Bath fans had actually left not long after the final whistle, but there were still a lot in town. But we went to the private room in this bar, and it was full of battered old leather sofas and chairs. I always remember it. And it was, you might think it would have been a huge party and singing. It wasn't actually. It was just, again, quite quiet. And we're just sitting contemplating what we'd done together. And it really was that special sort of moment to realize that this, you know, we'd achieved it. This will be a bond that we'll have for the rest of our lives. And so it wasn't sort of crazy and wild. It was just really enjoyable. And it got crazy and wild later on. But I just always remember that hour when it was just us. It was just the players, the coaches, the physios. So the real inner group, the core group, the inner sanctum, if you like. And it was just a lovely hour of contemplation. And then it got a bit crazy.
Andy, you mentioned the Lisbon Lions, who won the round ball version of the European Cup, the first British side to do so in 1967. I was fortunate enough to run into 8 or 9 of that group retouring Lisbon when the European Cup final next went there in 2014. And they stayed in the same hotel. They had a little bit of togetherness time, sort of 47 years on. You've not too long since passed the 2 decades point since that day in Bordeaux. But as a group, I mean, how did you get on then? And how do you get on now? And as a leader of that group, how did you manage to keep such big characters together then and now, I guess?
They were an easy team to captain because they were so experienced. And there were so many leaders throughout the team that I've found other teams much harder when you've got a lot of younger players and you're really having to be a role model, and you've got to show that inspiration. You've got to model what you coach, all these things that you have to deal with younger players. Whereas, you know, that backline just, you know, it didn't need much coaching, far less leading. It was just a wonderful group of players. And so it's that bond that you've always got. And 2 years ago in 2018, 20 years anniversary, it was lovely. The club invited us all back for a Heineken Champions Cup game against the Scarlets, actually, in the Friday night. They put us all in a box, and we went for dinner beforehand, and it was immediately you're back into it. You know, there's a lot of those players like Jeremy Guscott, who, you know, I work with obviously annually in the BBC team, and there's lots of, you know, Yayan's involved in media, so I've seen a lot of Yayan over the years. Same with Victor with his hospitality business. So there's a lot of the players that I'd seen quite a bit of. Mike Catt is probably my closest friend from that group. He was an usher at my wedding just a few months after that Heineken Cup final. So, you know, there's always a connection. But I think what rugby gives you, and when you have a win like we had in Heineken Cup, is that there's a true sense of friendship that you can go months, even years, maybe multiple years without seeing each other. But when you do see each other, you just pick up immediately and you've got that connection and that bond. And that's what it was like that night. It was great to see everyone. We had a great crack, we had a few beers, and 20 years on, we'd all aged, some better than others. It was lovely to be recognised by the club. And, you know, the 20 years since that time, the club, I think we've won one Challenge Cup in that time, but other than that, there's not been the success that, you know, that Heineken Cup was almost the end of that successful period for Bath, the incredibly successful period. So the supporters still, you know, idolise that team and the players, and for all the supporters, it was great for them to be able to recognise, you know, that special group of players that won the Heineken Cup back in 1998.
I'm going to ask you a very, very difficult question now as we come towards the end of this Champions Rugby show, Andy. You lifted the Calcutta Cup at BT Murrayfield following in the footsteps of David Soule in 2000 when you stopped England winning the Grand Slam with that victory in Edinburgh. Can lifting the Heineken Cup compare as an achievement in your career?
You know, it does. I've differentiated these two. I was very lucky to have these two games that almost defined my career. And I differentiate them in saying that the Calcutta Cup at Murrayfield was probably the highlight of my career. But winning the Heineken Cup and captaining back to the Heineken Cup was without doubt the greatest achievement. Because the Calcutta Cup was a one-off game. There were circumstances that meant in that 80 minutes we were able to beat a team that should have gone, well, they were going for the Grand Slam and we'd played 4, lost 4, they'd played 4, won 4. So there was the weather factor, there was all that. It was at home, it was at Murrayfield. It was very special, as I say, as a highlight, as a moment. That was fantastic. But the sense of achievement of winning the Heineken Cup, where you've got all the group matches, you've got the quarterfinal, the semi-final, you've got to go to France to play the reigning European champions, Heineken Cup champions in Brive, pretty much on their doorstep, in their backyard in Bordeaux. That was without doubt was the greatest achievement. And I just think how, as I said, the importance that we'd placed in it to be able to call ourselves the best team in Europe was such that, you know, that was a great achievement. And it hit home to me a number of years later. I was I was with my two daughters in Edinburgh here and walking down the street, and there was just two couples coming towards me and they just stopped me. And in a West Country drawl, they said, "We were there. Thank you." And they kept walking. And my eldest daughter said, "What does that mean?" And I just knew that they were both, the two couples were Bath Rugby fans, and they were in Bordeaux that weekend. And that was probably 15 years on. And that's all they wanted to say was just thank you. And I think that when you get moments like that, and anytime you go back and people talk about what they were doing that weekend and their memories of it, you realise just how special it was. And so without doubt, that was the greatest achievement of my career.
Well, Andy, we're going to really look forward to looking back in a Heineken Champions Cup rewind on the site in a few weeks' time. To that day, we'll be playing the match in full, and anybody who wasn't there can relive it, and those who were there can relive their emotions from it. We really thank you for joining us and giving us your recollections as well, Andy, and all the best when live rugby comes back. We'll look forward to listening to you from behind the mic. Thank you very much, Andy.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to remember such a memorable day.
Wonderful to reminisce there with Scotland and Bath hero Andy Nicol, all on that season in 1997-98 when Bath Rugby became the first non-French side to lift the Heineken Cup. Please subscribe, rate and review our Champions Rugby Show podcast. And we've got another European legend coming up shortly to tell you their story from a quarter of a century of what is now the Heineken Champions Cup. But until then, from me and from all the team, goodbye.